3CR, your station, your voice.
Coming up is a podcast brought to you by the dedicated and diverse volunteers at 3CR. Just a quick message before you get there. For the month of June, we're asking listeners to donate to the station to help keep us going. We rely on the generous donations of the community to survive. Go to 3cr.org.au/donate and show your support for community-owned and community-run media. Thanks for your support and happy listening.
There is a place where time stands still. Where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my name.
Took it in the guts, Barry.
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
and you go through
that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie for Showreel on 3CR. And thank you very much for all the people who participated in the Radiothon and put some money into the coffers to reach Showreel's target. And we did reach our target. So obviously you are interested in Australian film and the things that are happening in the Australian film industry. Of course, 3CR still hasn't reached its full on target. It's got about $50,000 to go. That means we have done a pretty fair job at raising that $275,000 target. And I know that we're coming to the end of the financial year. So all you guys out there who are actually financially happening, it'd be great if you threw a little bit of money our way. You can go online to 3cr.org.au. You could also ring us up on 9419 8377 to keep the fabulous 3CR, the best little community radio station that talks with a roaring political voice on air. Today we're going to talk to Alicia Brisciani, and I'll just get her on the line right now. G'day, Alicia. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. And I've often had acquaintanceship with you because you're a publicist who roars for film, but you've got a particular personal project going on that's going to enrich the Australian cinema landscape coming out of Nova. Tell my listeners all about it.
Yes, you're very right. This is a personal passion project for me. I have Italian roots, but I also have a great passion for Italian cinema. And I really just want to see some. So I thought I want to get these really good films that we otherwise might not get here, even though we're so lucky in Australia with how many films we get from Italy and from all around the world. I feel like there are some gems that we do miss out on, and I don't want to miss out on them. And I really like going to the cinema.
And you've got this thing called Espresso Cinema, and it's tailored to the winter months, isn't it?
Yes. So Espresso Cinema, we're screening a different film each month. They all have a bit of a wintry theme or appeal, but they're also very heartwarming, or all have a bit of something, some energy to give to sort of light up our winter. And Espresso Cinema has always been about just giving those little sort of pick-me-ups of Italian cinema through the year.
Well, it's interesting because when you watch films that are specifically made for a particular audience, the Italian audience, it's a domestic audience, it's not always the same view that you see the world from in a, you know, blockbuster designed for international audiences. That's the truth of the matter, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the film screening on Sunday, The Story of Frank and Nina, is a comedy, but it's not what you think of as a broad Italian comedy made for an Italian audience specifically. It's very intelligent, it's very worldly, it's very funny, and has influences, you can see, from French cinema and culture from all over the place. It's all about the power of words and about education. So
Well, it's an award winner from the Venice Film Festival, so it's up to the minute, isn't it?
It's very up to the minute. In fact, the actress won a major award for it last week, and the film received an entirely different nomination for Best Comedy this week. So it's very fresh.
Well, it's also very interesting for an Australian audience, really, to take on board the type of comedy from a non-American, non-English-speaking cultural background, isn't it? Because there are differences.
There are huge differences, not in this film, but often in Italian cinema, there's a lot more physical comedy than we have here, which I do personally really like, whereas this film this week is more intellectual comedy.
And I was just going to say, the one that you've got on July the 20th, which is Trifole, as in truffles, that actually goes to something very deep into Italian culture on a whole lot of levels, because it brings back a person who has been a grandchild from who's been growing up and working in England, London, and going back to look after the grandfather who's an aficionado in something that is quintessentially Italian, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I felt like I personally and so many Australians would be able to identify with that reconnecting with your roots and what it means to have that connection to land and people and place. And this film has such a deep sense of place, the forest, the earthiness of the truffles and that tiny little area around Alba in Piemonte in Italy that's so world famous. And truffles sort of is such a luxury item, but really just gets to the real heart of just what they really are, and family and simple pleasures and connection with the earth, which is something really special and just the most spectacular landscape and such a fun film to watch in our own truffle season in winter.
Well, it's interesting to me because I was having a conversation with someone about Italians in general, that being incredibly well educated but having very great deal of difficulty finding employment in their own country, and often they end up in London. And is that something that runs through this film?
The film doesn't focus on that. She returns to having gone to London and sort of seemingly failed in her own eyes, and she really finds strength in reconnecting with her grandfather, and she goes truffle hunting on his behalf.
And that's interesting.
Quite an empowering journey in the forest there looking for truffles, which I think is often quite a masculine.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Area, but for her, this eye-opening kind of empowering journey into the forest. Her grandfather's played by a 90-year-old actor who often used to work with Visconti, who is from the region, so that adds just more sort of authenticity and connection to place in the most lovely way.
Well, the other thing that I was wondering about too, just from my reading, something I was reading incidentally recently, wondering if for people who are of Italian descent who came to Australia after the war, and if just the very sense of place that is regional in this film might actually reawakening understandings of times before the ristorante, becoming a country called Italy as opposed to the regional alliances?
Yeah, I think so. I think this film is also about, and it's the same story everywhere regionally around the world of lifestyles that are disappearing with time. And this one that's very much still alive with this lovely old man, and the woman comes back and she's forgotten the language, and she's forgotten so many things, and she sort of engages in this world that itself is rapidly disappearing. So there is also the message of sustainability and a changing world and things that we are losing if we're not careful.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And of course, the last film in the sequence, which is August the 31st, The Sleeper, The Lost Caravaggio. Is this a documentary or is it a feature?
It's a documentary that is very much a thriller. It is fascinating, this story that 3 years ago, a painting popped up that suddenly was thought to be a lost work by Caravaggio, who, you know, is adored worldwide and only has 70 works in total, roundabout. So it's this huge...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he died at 30 or 33 or something, yeah. You know, like in a brawl. Yeah. So, you know.
So it becomes this, you know, what happened, where did this painting come from, and what happens when something like this is found? Who gets to, you know, really make the call, and what happens to it in the marketplace? And the collision of those two worlds of art and business,
commerce,
and industry, yeah, and even government ultimately is so compelling. But I had to have this one.
Oh, well, it's also interesting, of course, because Italy is a land of treasures, isn't it, that are perceived to be owned internationally, but in actual fact they have a traditional home. That's true, isn't it?
It's absolutely true, and there's a bit of a war over that in this film, and it gets right down to, you know, who really owns the art and who gets to see it. And yes, it's the quintessential Italian culture and cultural heritage, but it's also cultural heritage of humanity, really. So it's absolutely fascinating.
Tell me, I know that you said that this is a love project, the Espresso Cinema, and the, you know, the three screenings that are going to be at Nova. On the dates, July 20, August 30, oh, and there's one very soon, actually, June the 29th. I missed out. June the 29th.
Yes, Sunday.
Yeah, and July the 20th and August the 31st, and they're all at 7 p.m, so you can put them in your calendar. But how did you source them? Tell my listeners a little bit about the machinations that make it possible for you to have decided that you're going to do this. I mean, it's supported by, you know, like it's supported by the Italian Business Women's Network, and it's sponsored by Campari. So obviously there's a push within the Australian context in Melbourne to bring people up to date with Italian modern cinema.
Absolutely. So for me, I was lucky enough, I had a grant from Screen Victoria back in 2018, and went and worked at the Venice Film Festival that year.
Ooh, how lucky for you.
Yeah, so privileged, so lucky, and such a career highlight. I still can't believe that actually happened. And really got to see in depth the festival, which is the most wonderful festival, but also it's an Italian festival, so they really get to showcase their own cinema, as well as being, you know, front-runner Oscar-worthy films.
And a delightful place.
And a delightful place. So, yeah, I really sort of thought that there were these films there. And in the last iteration of Espresso Cinema, which was actually pre-COVID and stopped for COVID, I took some films from there as well. And that was sort of a good starting point for me here, because I'd seen Story of Frank and Nina that was around. And I thought, okay, if I can see some films that are really good enough to, you know, go to the effort to do this, then I'll do it. So I sort of did a lot of research and, you know, had a look at what was around at festivals, but what critics like, what had won awards, but also what general cinema goers seem to have really enjoyed and loved. And the Story of Frank and Nina was absolutely one of those. Sunday night, that screening is sponsored by Campari. So it's a very Milanese theme on Sunday. And Campari sponsor the Venice Film Festival, and they have a sort of a natural marriage with Italian cinema. They also sponsor MIF now, so I think that sort of connection is translating really nicely to Australian audiences who understand it and who appreciate it. We're such a film literate city and nation, I think, which we're very lucky to be.
Yeah, okay, so, but in a sense, you can't just say, oh, I want to play this film. You actually have to negotiate the rights to play it.
You absolutely do have to negotiate the rights to play it. And that's been an interesting journey, because that's not something an area of the industry I normally work in. But, yeah, being really enjoyable to get out there. And I haven't been going through the normal channels of going to the festivals and having those relationships existing. So, yeah, it's been really an enjoyable new challenge for me as well.
All right. So, in actual fact, that original seeding grant from Film Victoria has actually ensured that Melbourne cinema goers, at least, are and you are being profiting from your increased professional skill.
Absolutely. That definitely gave me the confidence to give something like this a go, which I'm really grateful for. It was a grant supporting women in the industry, which is just fantastic. And Cinema Nova as well, just, you know, to be open to this kind of thing, of course, is we're very lucky.
Thanks very much for talking to us this morning, Alicia.
Thanks for having me, Annie.
Hi, my name is Rolf De Heer. I don't live in Melbourne. I live across the water in Tasmania. But if I did live in Melbourne, my number one radio station would be 3CR, because it's about community, and community matters.
It certainly does. And what a great filmmaker is Rolf De Heer. You're on 3CR with Annie on Showreel, and we are delving into some different aspects of the Australian film industry and what's available to you as a viewer. But now we're going to move on to a chat I had with Guy Wilkinson. Now, Guy is a wonderful filmmaker, I'll have to say. He's got three films on at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival coming up. And this was quite a thing, actually, because I've been watching a whole lot of these different films, and I realised that there was three films by the same person, and I was really impressed. One's called Lasting Trace, and that, as he talks about, is about a Melbourne tattoo artist. Six Strings Up is about a musician who's also a repairer of guitars. And the last one, which is called Midnight Malonga, which investigates the local tango scene, which is completely eye-opening, because the way he makes a film really does investigate these people's lives and why they do what they do. And to me, Guy is the absolute pinnacle of a self-motivated filmmaker. And this is just a short chat that I had with Guy, and I'll give you the rundown of when you can see his films if you so wish.
Thanks very much for talking to me, Guy. I was really intrigued by your films. Can you tell me a little bit about your filmmaking journey, how you got into it?
Sure. I used to work as a travel writer and a journalist, doing some photography as well. But, you know, after the pandemic and becoming a father, I've been thinking about it for a long time, but I think that was the impetus for me to finally give it a crack and actually take the plunge and begin transitioning from writing into making films. I mean, I always felt that the skill sets were pretty intertwined, the kind of the holy trinity of writing, photography, and, you know, actually getting the camera rolling as well. So it just felt like a natural progression in many ways.
It's quite clear that it does, because it's about storytelling, isn't it? And your films have got a very strong sense of order in them, I'll have to say. Can you tell me a little bit about how you choose your subjects?
Yeah, it can be a variety of ways. It's happened quite organically. One of the first films I did, it was a writing assignment, and it was a spin-off from that. Another one was actually a very close friend of mine. She just had a fascinating story. Other times I might specifically want to immerse myself in a certain world or a certain culture. So I'll seek out an organization that facilitates that, and I'll reach out to them. And then I think the final way really is just, it can be out on the street. I might just meet someone of interest or just see something, and something about it resonates with me.
The three films that are in the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival actually follow that trajectory, doesn't it? So Lasting Trace is about first-tier tattooist in Melbourne.
Top-tier tattooist.
So tell me about that.
His name's Rob Abel, the tattoo artist. He and I first met around 20 years ago when I was in Queenstown. I actually decided to get a tattoo, and there was a little backstreet tattoo shop, and Rod did my first tattoo. I'd always admired his work, and I realized that I'd been looking to get another tattoo done, and I realized he was in Melbourne, so I thought, why don't we try and do both? He could, you know, we could kind of do an exchange. He works on a tattoo, and we could do a little film. I was just interested to find out what it had been like for him, because he was so new to the whole profession when I first met him. And of course, 20 years on, he's become this highly respected tattoo artist. I just was curious to know what that journey had been like for him.
Yeah, okay. And what about Six Strings Up? I mean, did you approach a musician who happened to be a person who repairs instruments, or was it the other way around?
Yeah, I'd actually never met Jeb Cardwell before. I knew that I wanted to do something that was immersed in the world of guitars. I had a lot of visuals in my head about someone who fixed guitars. And I just went online, and I actually found him on Instagram, and there was a little video of him playing slide guitar on a beautiful old Resophonic. I liked his playing. I liked his attitude when he spoke. He just had a certain charisma to him. So I reached out and just met him in his workshop, and we just chatted for a couple of hours about what he did. And he mentioned this quite pivotal moment about what got him started on the path, which was finding this old beaten up record that changed his life. And when I went away and thought about that, I felt that there was a story there.
Yeah, okay. And then, of course, Midnight Milonga is immersing yourself in a world, which actually turns out to be a very fascinating story, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that was an example of something I just happened upon in the street. I was walking home on a summer's evening with my family in Carlton, and we happened to cut through Argyle Square, and there was this scene up on the stage there underneath the cherry blossoms. There were these people dancing, and I was mesmerized by the spectacle. And I think I've always been, growing up in England, I've always been kind of terrified of dancing. So I think I was almost a little bit envious of this connection people seem to have, as well as it being a beautiful spectacle. So yeah, I just approached a lady named Liz Pierce, who was the president of Melbourne Social Tango at the time, and we had a chat. And they just invited me to come to a milonga, which is the name for a dance. And I think what I was struck by there was how many people I spoke with said, oh, this is something I do 3, 4, 5 times a week. Very few people were, oh, I do this once a month. And I thought, wow, your life revolves around this. And I think that's something I've always been drawn to, which is people who are really into something.
I'm interested in, there's a great deal of clarity in the films that you make, and it really takes a viewer into these worlds, which is really fascinating. I mean, you don't waste any time in telling the story. I was wondering how you actually set about making the film. Is it in the edit, or is it before that?
I think a lot of it is in the edit, but I've come to learn the hard way that the more clarity you have about the story you're trying to tell ahead of time, the easier and the more concise and compelling the story will be. I think it's really important to try and understand the modality of the documentary you're trying to make before you set out. So the first thing I'll often do now is meet with someone for coffee before I even start rolling the camera. I'll just leave the camera at home. And I think that the questions that you ask almost begin to inform the narrative, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does make sense. The other thing that, and so you're a single camera operator, or do you take a team?
I have been a single operator. I've done everything, a lot of things to date by myself, but I've just more recently started working with one or two other people. There's been a slight shift there, and I've actually really enjoyed that. I've found it does take a lot of pressure off. The reason why I went into doing it a lot of myself, I have worked as part of a film collective in San Francisco and as a runner on sets. And I found a lot of people were unduly enamored with having a title. They really loved, you know, I'm an AC, I'm a DP, I'm this. And I really just wanted to move away from that and focus more on stripping it back and just trying to tell stories as authentically as possible. So that's a lot of the reason behind why I do things solo.
Yeah, because I was wondering, I mean, this is at a film festival. How do you make a living?
Well, you just have to break it into revenue streams. Some of it can be through YouTube affiliate marketing links where you list your gear underneath each film. Some of it through Patreon. You can always apply for grants. And I have side projects. I still do a bit of journalism work. But, you know, that is the ultimate question, really, that I'm still working on. I would like to build more of a following on the likes of Patreon and really try and make a living as an artist.
Yeah, because I was, I've watched a lot of the films at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival, and I realised that you've got three pieces in the festival. And I was like, I just found it really compelling to see a body of work, not just a single film.
Right, yeah, I was as surprised as anyone, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't surprise me because they're all really interesting films. So, yeah. Is there anything else you wanted to say about the whole process?
I just think that in some regards, societally, we've lost the ability to listen. And I think that ordinary people often have the most compelling stories if people will actually just take the time to listen. And yeah, I think just the importance of listening.
Thank you for taking some time to talk to me.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, what an interesting guy. That's Guy Wilkinson. The films are Lasting Trace, Six Strings Up, Midnight, Malonga. They're at different times at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. The Lasting Trace is part of Short Session 6. The Six Strings Up is on the program at 9:15 p.m. on July the 18th, and Midnight Malonga is part of Short Session 8. But you can go to Melbourne Documentary Film Festival website and get the details. Of course, on screen, online, Melbourne Documentary Film Festival starts at the beginning of July, the beginning, July the 1st, and runs till the 31st. But on screen at Nova, it runs from the 15th of July to the 31st of July. And so that's a wrap for Showreel this week. Coming up next is Published or Not. We're going to go out with a track from Charlie Needs Brace. She's got a documentary called Nawa, which is Take Care at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival, full of great music.
Your station, your voice.
You've been listening to a podcast produced at 3CR Community Radio. It's Radiothon time. This year, we need to raise $275,000 to keep the station going. Any amount you can afford makes a big difference. It's so easy to donate. Head to 3cr.org.au/donate. We rely on the community support. Thanks for listening.